Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Arthur Staple. You're listening to No Sleep Till Belmont, the Islanders podcast from The Athletic. Joined, as always, by AJ Maletsko, who was a very, very busy broadcaster last week. AJ, how you doing?
I'm good and ready to get back at it tonight. But yeah, lots of stuff going on. Exciting hockey day in America on Sunday for hockey fans around all over the place. But good to be back.
Yeah, and you were not on either of the Islander-Buffalo weekend games, which probably was for the best given the overall quality of the game that we saw, mostly from the visitors. But you definitely did see kind of the highlight of the weekend and really the highlight of the hockey weekend and maybe even the sports weekend, which was Matthew Barzal's goal to get the Islanders on the board in the second period on Saturday. And I thought we could devote a little time to talking about that goal and what you thought of it and just what we think of what's going on with Matthew Barzal this year, which I think is not necessarily flying a little bit under the radar, but he's been pretty special, and it's not just because he put on an incredible show with that goal.
Well, let me start with the goal. It was awesome. I mean, how fun is that? That is just, as a fan, seeing a skill like that on display. This, everybody knows about Matt Barzal's speed. But for him to be able to execute a play like that back between his legs and finish it at the speed that he's moving his feet and his mind and his hands, it all has to work, right? And I do think it's – when you look at something like that, what strikes me is that that's instinctual to a player like that, right? He's not planning that. I mean, I'm sure he's done it before, messing around in practice. But in a game, he's not coming down the wing thinking, I really want to get a between the legs goal today, right? It just comes to him and happens, and he scores. And I was impressed. It was a big goal too, as you said, just because it got the scoring going and had those zeros after the first period. So it was, you know, that skill to me, talk about exciting hockey.
Yeah, and we've certainly heard the common refrain about the Islanders that it's not that exciting to watch them play, but he's kind of been appointment level viewing it a lot of times this season. You know, I think it started opening night when he made that kind of inside out move and snapped one home, kind of made Tony D'Angelo look foolish, which was sort of the beginning of the end for Tony D'Angelo. You know, he kind of took a penalty later in that game, ended up getting sat out by the Rangers, put on waivers, still waiting. And it kind of all started in that first period of that first game at the Garden. And he had one that was even better than that against the Penguins a couple weeks ago, where he kind of did another inside-out move on Pierre-Olivier Joseph and then went top shelf on the Penguins goalie in the third period to give the Islanders a lead. And that one kind of stood out as like, oh my gosh, like this guy is – he's not just being creative, but it's in an attacking way. You know, I think we're used to seeing Matthew Barzal use his creativity to make a great pass or – that kind of vision that he's had or circle the zone and hold off a defender. But I think we're seeing less and less of that this year, and we're seeing more of this, which I think is what Barry Trotz wants to see, is more of this.
Well, you know, I think that you're absolutely right. We're seeing a step in the evolution of Matthew Barzal. He comes into the league, he wins the Calder, the pressure's off of him. Tavares is here as the name and the face of the franchise, right? And then he sort of takes over that role. and Barry Trotz comes in, there's all these different sort of changes that go on, and he's still a young kid that's new to the league, but now everybody knows about his skill. And that's what I think has been interesting over the last 2 years, is just to see how Barry Trotz has handled that, meaning he knows he has a kid with a tremendous amount of skill and so much upside and potential that's through the roof. But what is he missing from his game, right? And all of those subtle details that Barry Trotz is known to focus on, that's what he's brought to his game. And it's sort of given a little bit of maturity, a little richness to his game. It's not just the inside-out moves that you're talking about. It's not these between-the-legs move. It's that he's staying on in practice and working on face-offs. And he's working, and J.G. Pageot has helped him a lot, and he says that. He's been helping him with that. It's back-checking. It's, you know, playing in the right way, as Barry Trotz always says. And, you know, what does that mean? It means a million different things. But what I think, to your point, this season specifically, he's trusting his teammates more. He's trusting his line mates more, meaning that he's giving them the puck, and then he's bust into the net, right? Give and goes are becoming a more popular part of his game. And instead of picking up the puck in the D zone and trying to beat five guys, he'll dish the puck and then he'll skate and then he gets the puck back and he only has to beat two guys. And all of those sort of maturations, I think, in the way he's played and his belief, and he's sort of bought into Barry Trotz in this system, which is a huge credit to a guy like Matt Barzal. So I just think that, you know, you mentioned what he's been doing this year, and it is sort of subtle. It's funny to talk about him in subtleties at all because of these highlight reel goals, right? He's dynamic. Your eyes are drawn to number 13 on the ice. He moves east-west. He moves north-south. He's all over the place. But it is those little tweaks that he's made to his game that I think is bringing him to an entirely new level.
And I think the benefits to his line mates, I think people have always kind of said, like, well, they need to put a sniper next to Matthew Barzal, just a pure scorer, no conscience shooter, kind of like what Oliver Wahlstrom, the Islanders, hope he'll be. But when you have a guy who's this much of a threat to score now, looking to shoot, you know, the goal numbers are up for his line mates. Anders Lee is all the way up to 12, and really, you know, we've mentioned him before, but he's been as steady as can be. Jordan Eberle's at 9, even though he hasn't gotten them all alongside Barzal. But if they're all on pace for 20 goals in a shortened season, then the attacking version of Matthew Barzal clearly benefits everybody.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because somebody like Anders Lee, you also talk in subtleties, somebody like him, he's a little bit like a bull in a china shop. He's just so strong and he's really hard to move off the puck. So funny to say he's subtle too, but what he brings to that line is subtle, right? He's in front of the net. He's working along the boards. He's doing sort of all of these strength things, which does create a little room for Matt Barzal, and he goes to the net. And I think that obviously Eberle's got a score. He's got a beautiful finishing touch. So they do seem to work off each other. I mean, for Jordan Eberle, though, he bumped down when Bovillia was injured, and he and Bailey switched spots, and his scoring didn't let up at all either. So he's pretty versatile in that top six, and he can score no matter what. But playing with those two guys, what I think for Barzal, playing with those two wingers, you know, Barry Trotz has said, as you mentioned, he goes to the net, this net drive that he has. That was the last 2 years. I remember in our pregame and postgame shows, we would always talk about whether Matt Barzal was engaged inside the dots. That was always sort of a way that we looked at it. And the games that he was flying out there and making differences, he was battling to get that inside position. And he was going to those, as Butch calls, the dirty areas, right? He was going that way. We don't even talk about that anymore because he does that consistently. Every game we see him doing that. And that to me is one of the biggest changes too. And I think some of that is you've got Anders Lee as a captain of this team dragging him into this fight. He's dragging the whole team into the fight. But when Anders Lee is willing to take the beating that he does in those hard areas, then Matt Barzal is able to go in there and say, okay, I can do this with you too. And Matt Barzal is so strong on his skates. He can take a beating and keep going.
Yeah, I think that was, to me, the most, you know, kind of the, not a forgotten part, but an underrated part of that goal is, you know, and Rasmus Ristolainen, I feel terrible for the guy. He's, you know, he's a 22 to 25 minute a night guy. He's been that way for a long time on a very bad team in Buffalo. He's strong as an ox, and I'm sure his strength has taken a hit because he had a very bad COVID bout that kept him out, I think, a little bit longer than everybody else on the team. And then they throw him back in, and they've got a bunch of injured D, so they're just trying to get him right back out there playing those minutes. But here's a guy who's got about 4 inches and 30 to 35 pounds on Barzal, and Barzal gets low, and basically this guy, you know, rolls off him like they're doing a stunt scene in a Western fight, and then Barzal's by himself with Ristolainen in the corner. It was it was a pretty ridiculous move even to just get into position to make the other ridiculous play. So it was, and you know, we were, I know I wrote a little bit of a piece about it, kind of breaking down some of the goals and talking about it. I've seen a lot of Islander goals now in my time covering the team and looking back at old footage from the dynasty era. And there certainly were more important goals in Islander history, Tinelli to Nystrom, various other goals during the dynasty era. But for just pure pizzazz and coolness, I don't think there's one that can beat this.
No, I think you're right. And you're also right that it wasn't just the between the legs finish, right? It was how he got there. And the whole thing was pretty exciting. And I don't think it's much of a stretch to say that that's going to be the goal of the year. It's hard to imagine anything better. And I did love, for anybody who's on social media, the overhead still shot that Matt Barzal posted to his Instagram. And I think he said, does this even need a caption or something, like whatever it was. But it's a really cool shot because the puck's in the net, but his stick is still between his legs. And it just shows the just absurdity of it and that he can do that sort of stuff. So I agree with you. I think that is for, you're talking about, he scored a goal, big goal of the game too. This isn't, you know, just sort of a goal that doesn't matter. And it was entertainment value. You can't get much better.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So we kind of left out or glossed over the part where the Islanders are on this great 7-0-1 streak. The last three were against a team, Sabres, that's in pretty much complete disarray, and that might be understating it a bit now that Jack Eichel might be out for a while. They have the Bruins tonight at home, and then it's three with the Devils kind of in the same Thursday, Saturday, Sunday format that they had the Sabres. Devils are not in a good space. They did win a game against the Bruins the other day, but again, a team that's struggling. And that doesn't matter. You know, you can kind of throw that out and say, maybe the Islanders aren't this good, but points are points, number one. And number two, these are the only teams you're playing. It's not like they're you know, not catching the Oilers when they're in the midst of a good streak, or they don't have to play the Leafs or Vegas at all this year. Like, this is the schedule that they made. They get every team in the division eight times. And the fact that they've had Buffalo five, and after this weekend, they'll have Jersey six when these teams are kind of free-falling a bit. You know, nobody needs to apologize for it, but do you feel like the Islanders are set up the way that they're going now to be competitive with when the time comes to face the better teams?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you look at what everybody was talking about before the season started, and the North Division made some noise about being the toughest division. But by and large, everybody recognized the East Division was the toughest division when you really look top to bottom. And with the exception maybe of the Devils and the Sabres, the other six could in any given's predictions be in the top four, right? And you look at the West and the Central, and it's not exactly the same competition. Now, again, fans in different fan bases will disagree with me, but I do think that the East was really sort of a giant division. And you make a good point. They've got the Sabres, they've got the Devils, and we've had long stretches against them. But, and you know, they did have their stretch against the Penguins, and they had some troubles with them. But the Bruins, they're 3-0 against them at the Coliseum so far this year. And not only that, they're playing well. It's not like these fluky games, and it's not like the Bruins for those games haven't been playing well. I mean, right now, I think the Bruins are stuttering a little bit, just based on a couple different things that are going on, some injuries they've had, you know, and it'll be interesting. Tonight's game, for example, Halak's back in net, and he struggled in the third period the last time they played. So it'll be interesting to see how he comes up. But I think for the Islanders, you look at, you just said points are points. There's no question, right? 2 points, put them in the bank. And if you stumble against the Sabres and you got a 3-game series and you even lose one of those, then that might come back to bite you later. The fact that they were able to very securely take those 3 games without much of a question, that bodes really well. Then, of course, they've got a bunch of games coming up against the Devils. They'll need to do the same thing. But all of that is confidence, too, as now they got the Bruins, and then they're going to get the Caps a bunch who are also playing really well. So, you know, I think for the Islanders, they are set up well. They're playing probably the best hockey they've played. They seem to be rounding into the form that we saw in August up in the bubble, right, where they were really clicking. Their defensive zone is solid. They're playing team D. They've got those layers that Barry Trotz has set up. They're taking that time and space away. They're limiting shots. Now, again, granted, the Buffalo Sabres aren't a very good team, but they have good players, and they're limiting those good players to not taking very many shots. And that's been, I think, really key for the way that the Islanders are playing. And of course, they're getting scoring, and they're getting depth scoring, which is important.
Yeah, I mean, the way that they've matched up with the Bruins, and again, no small factor considering the way the Islanders have been playing at the Coliseum. This is all 4 of these games have been at the Coliseum. So they got 4 left against them in Boston, which has pretty much been a house of horrors for the Islanders over the last, I don't know, decade or so, like pretty much since I started covering them in the early 2010s. They didn't win a lot in Boston. So that's, you have to take that with a grain of salt. But, when you look at this Bruins lineup, and you mentioned they're going through some things. Jake DeBrusk, who was one of their most dynamic players the last couple of years, is a healthy scratch tonight. Tuukka Rask, they left him back in Boston. It's Yaro Halak's net. We all know about Yaro's pluses and minuses from his time on the island, and he doesn't love to play his former teams that much. So that's another factor. But when you look at the teams that are around them at the top of the division, Washington, Boston, Philly, and obviously, yes, Washington and Philly had a couple of good results against them when the Islanders were in their skid, but if you're even taking those games from a month ago when the Islanders were under 500, they had a tie game with the Caps in the final minute, which should have been at least a point and probably 2. They were up 3-0 after a period before they fell apart in the other game. Philly came back to tie both times, lost in overtime, coin flip essentially. It's not like anybody's, throttling them. That's near the top of this division. And I think it's another way that NHL watchers tend to underestimate the Islanders is that when they are playing the way that they played the majority of the 3 games against Buffalo, they can do that against anybody. Maybe the results are a little bit better against a weaker team, but when the Islanders are on their game and rolling through, I think in the playoffs, Washington can say and Philly can say, like, yeah, when they're going well, it does, like, they killed us 5-on-5. So that I think is maybe the missing piece for the Islanders the first 20 games or so. That's really seems to be there now.
Yeah, you mentioned the early games when they had their skid, if we can call it that, or whatever, but they were in these games, right? Losing in overtime or, whatever it may be. They weren't playing very well, and they were still doing that, to your point. And, somebody like Oliver Wahlstrom wasn't in the lineup consistently, and we hadn't really seen what he could do. And now he's gaining confidence, and he's becoming a goal scorer, and he's really helped their sort of solidify their power play, what we used to call their second unit, but I don't know, their 1A, 1B units now. And I think that Sorokin was maybe a question mark at the very beginning based on his very first start in the NHL and all that went with that when that was at MSG against the Rangers. So the unexpected start. So there were so many question marks. Now, granted, other teams had the same thing at the beginning of the season. You're trying to iron out details, figure out where pieces fit and different injuries. The Islanders, knock on wood, have been pretty fortunate in that sense, but they also have had some other people come in and out of the lineup. You look at Bellows had a chance to come in, and Barry Trotz had made himself known about his feelings on that. So there were some puzzle pieces that he was trying to settle down, and he really likes the way that they're playing. And somebody on the media call this morning was talking about what is a Barry Trotz team look like to him, because we're coming up to his milestone. And he said that the first thing he said was the players play for each other. And I do think that's what they're doing now. I think at the beginning of the year, there was it was a little discombobulated. Like, I don't know where I fit here, what I'm doing. And now suddenly everybody is bought into the system. They're playing for each other, and they're playing their role. And so I think as they come in and they, will face the Caps and Philly a little more moving forward, I like their chances. Obviously, it's going to be a grind every night, and they got to bring their A game, and they got to make sure that they're doing all these things consistently. But I just think they're really set up well right now, and they're confident.
Yeah, you mentioned Barry Trotz, and people were asking questions of him about tonight's game, which is number 1,700 for him behind an NHL bench, which is 3rd all time. behind Joel Quenneville, still coaching also and having a lot of success in Florida this season, and Scotty Bowman, who may be a little too far off to think about catching right now. I think he's over 2,100. But it's an impressive milestone. And Barry, I think he joked the other day, said, just means I'm old. He's really not that old. You know, he's still in his 50s. There's certainly guys out there that have coached deep into their 60s and 70s. So getting that all-time record isn't out of the question for him. And we've discussed it before that what's really unique about Barry from our perspective in the media is that he's not a volatile guy when he's dealing with the media, as some coaches are. And the concepts that he tries to communicate to his players, which they talk about as him being able to communicate so effectively, he communicates to us and therefore to the fans very effectively what he wants to see, and has a few little sayings that are easy to digest. And in general, you know, I think he pointed out today from game one with Nashville almost 30 years ago to now, he's mellowed out a bit. And I remember when he reached 800 wins, I talked to a lot of people that were on those early Nashville teams, guys like Mike Dunham and Andrew Brunette, who played for him in the minors as well, and Tom Fitzgerald. They all said that, you know, he was a little bit more emotional on the bench, but he's always been the same person, that a guy who makes sure he knows, you know, your girlfriend or wife's name, your kids' names, is really attuned to that side of things. And the guy that he reminds me of a little bit, it's definitely a different era, is Al Arbor, and a guy who could be tough when he needed to be, because you have to be as a coach, especially in the NHL, but also someone who cared a lot. And that makes people want to stick around and makes people want to succeed for you.
Well, what's interesting is when we talk to him, oftentimes the press conferences, and not as much now because it's on Zoom, but in pre-COVID times, they would go a little longer because he would ask you, whether it's you or me or other people, about what's going on. I remember one time I brought my son, he was on spring break, so I brought him down and he wasn't allowed in the locker room, rightfully so. But he was sort of sitting up there, and Barry took him aside, started talking to him, and he's a goalie, and chatted with him for really earnestly, talked to him. So you're absolutely right. He cares. He's not doing it for a reputation. He just cares about people, and he loves hockey. He loves to talk hockey. Early on in our podcast this season, we talked about him, compared him to Ted Lasso. And I still stand by that, because he comes up with these little things that are and I joked with him at one point. I said, you're sort of like my life coach, because he says things that can translate on the ice and into real life. And I just think that he cares about these players, and he cares about the product on the ice. But at the end of the day, when he talks about the process, he knows it's a results-driven league, but he really cares about the guys that are playing for him. And you know, I think the locker room and the chemistry on the team is of utmost importance to him, and he knows that that's also going to get him the results that he wants.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, we're near our last segment of the show, and of course, we've got mail.
You've got mail.
A couple of good questions, a lot of questions, and I will say this off the top. A lot of questions related to the April 12th trade deadline. And so I'm going to give AJ a week to study up on trade possibilities and trade targets and salary cap stuff, because we're going to dive in next week and do a whole show devoted to the trade deadline, which could be a huge dud in the era of the pandemic and COVID and financial straits for every team. But
I'm going to tell you right now, that's not my strength. I'm already calling in sick for next week's episode.
Maybe there'll
just
be
kidding. I'll study up.
Maybe
I'll
there'll be a few. All right. So leaving aside a lot of the trade questions, and I'll probably just ask again on Twitter next week. But, I think one of the questions that I'm getting here, and it is slightly related to the trade deadline, is, and we discussed this last week, how shocking it is. And in one more week of this, the Islanders still only use six defensemen. They're still the only, they're going to be the only team to use six until it either gets to the end of the year or something happens. We've mentioned that, you know, some teams, LA, Colorado, have used as many as 12 so far. So Pete has asked me, you know, is with no injuries, is Sebastian Aho truly an option for an extended role? He's been on the roster the whole season. And if not him, who without a trade? Now, my question in spinning off of that, AJ, is when you're a person who's not playing and Sebastian Aho has been on the Islanders roster and not played for a long time going back to last season, do you think that the confidence, and it's a two-way street, does the coach have confidence in you to step in when you need to, or even when you don't need to, if you want to give somebody a rest? And do you, as someone who's practicing and skating with the team, does Sebastian Aho's confidence flag a bit not getting in there day after day after day?
You know, I think that's a really, really good question, and it depends on the athlete, really. And to me, we don't know Sebastian Aho and what he will offer on the ice or even as a personality because we haven't seen him. I will say that clearly Barry Trotz likes the group of six that he has, and they've done really well, And I love a lot of the sort of changes we've seen them go through, and we've seen them gel a little bit, especially that Letty Mayfield pair that's has struggled. They haven't ironed out all of it yet, but they look a little bit better and better with each, you know, as we go through this season. With that said, I probably would have played Aho in one of these back-to-backs against the Sabres. On the flip side of that, these are games, they're sort of must-wins, right? These are points that are up for grabs, and to your points, 2 points are 2 points, as you said earlier. So, you know, you don't want to send the message to the team, oh, I don't care about this game, so I'm going to change the lineup up. But the further we get into the season without him changing those 6D, it becomes really intense in terms of what the pressure looks like if one of these players goes down. Even if it's just a tweak and they need to sit out a game, suddenly Sebastian Aho's in. And it's his job as a professional to be ready and to figure out that mental side of it. And how do I stay confident? Physically, he's ready. He's got to be, right? He's training with the team. That's what they do. But mentally, how does he find that confidence? Does he continually talk to the assistant coaches? Is he talking to the leaders on the team? Is he talking to the defensemen? Hopefully he's doing all that stuff and doing what he needs to do to stay prepared. But it's a really tough one, because if you're not playing and the coach is not giving you a tap on the shoulder to get into the lineup, how do you find that confidence? I do think, you know, we're going to talk trade deadline. I wonder whether Lou will be looking for a depth D going into hopefully a playoff run, because you can't do this with just 60, in my opinion. I think that you look at in COVID and everything, but just injuries that they've had over the last couple of years, they're going to need somebody that Barry Trotz truly trusts.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. It is still remarkable that they've been able to be successful with it, number one. And number two, that they're just kind of, you know, they're hitting on 16 here every single time, it feels like, with this. You're riding a hot streak, and those hot streaks are kind of designed to end at some point. So who are we to question it? But if it does happen, I guess we can all say, oh my God, we told them so, that this was going to happen. Now what are you going to do? But yeah, we'll have to see about that. Yona has a good one, and this is a very optimistic question. You know, what will the disparity in travel between the divisions, do we feel it'll play a role when they get to that final four and they're sorting out where they're playing? And I was thinking about this the other day. If the Islanders make it to the playoffs, let's start with the basics, and then they make it out of their division and they're one of these four semifinalists that get seeded, essentially. Let's say they play the Leafs. The Leafs are the top team in terms of points. They get out of the Canadian division. What that series is going to look like, given the way the world is looking, the way the difference in vaccine rollout between the States and Canada. Canada has, there's no fans in any buildings there. Islanders are going to start to have fans within a week. The possibility exists that the Islanders could be hosting the Leafs at the Coliseum for an entire best of seven, which is boggles my mind that that could be a possibility, that but it's probably something that could realistically happen. Now, Jonah's question is more about the Canadian division. They've been flying back and forth to play teams on the West Coast, teams in the East, in the Eastern time zone, and the Islanders basically a 45-minute flight is about as long as they're going to spend in the air, leaving aside the fact that they, you know, you spend weeks on the road, you know, a solid week on the road, which sounds like it's not the easiest thing to do for the guys. Do you think that that's going to take a toll on that Canadian division team, especially if it's, say, Toronto gets out of that division, but they had to play Edmonton and Winnipeg in best of sevens before they get there?
Well, so it is an interesting question because you add the travel into this, and Barry Trotz has said in mostly he's talk, does it when he's he mentions this when he's talking about his goaltenders and their rotation, is that even if there's a back-to-back, there's very little travel involved, which is a lot easier on these guys. It's not the actual playing of the games that can be mentally and physically trying. It's the travel in between and getting home late and staying in different hotel rooms and all these different things that go into the life of a professional hockey player.
Also the life of a professional beat writer or a professional broadcaster. Let's make sure we put that out there too.
Correct. That is true. And some of us don't get the, you know, private charters either. So maybe a little bit tougher. But the, you know, if you're looking at the way that the Canadian division, they have to do that, but it's a little more normal for them too, in some ways, right? Because they're traveling like they always did, obviously not across the border. And maybe the question is a little bit, if they go through the first two rounds and they're getting beat up by Edmonton and Calgary and physical teams, and they're trying to get through that. You look at the Islanders, if they get to that round, look at who they probably have to go through, right? I mean, they've got to go through whether it's Bruins, Capitals, Philly, Penguins, you know, any of those people, those matchups are physical beatings no matter what. Now, they won't have the travel to have also worn them down. So, you know, I don't know what that's going to look like. And that's sort of what's so interesting about this COVID season is there are so many unknowns about it. And yeah, if the Leafs or somebody in Canada comes down and, you know, stays here at the Marriott Hotel, which I've gotten to know so well for, you know, however long a series would last, that does change things, right? And the Islanders fans get to be in the building and they get to see this live. That's pretty amazing to think that that might happen. How does it affect them? I don't know. And you're talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs right now in March versus in May or June, I mean, the Leafs right now are flying. I mean, they are unreal. Can they sustain that? Who knows? I mean, that's always the question mark. So I don't have an answer for that question. It's a good one.
And really, seven games, Islanders, Leafs, John Tavares having to play at the Coliseum possibly seven times in front of, say, 10,000 fans. Like, is there money I could put in a fund somewhere to make sure that that happens? Because that would really be about as entertaining as possible.
I agree.
I'll throw one last curveball that has not that much to do with the Islanders, but it's a guy the Islanders have a history with and have seen a lot, and really, really, he might be the most hated guy for Islanders fans in the league right now. What'd you think of the Tom Wilson hit and the Tom Wilson suspension?
You know, I thought it was a bad hit. I did. I mean, I talked to a ton of people who have seen it both ways. To me, he hit his head. I know he was suspended for boarding. But to me, it was the I think it's rule 43, 48. I'm not totally sure of the number, but the head contact, where is the head, not the initial point of contact, the way the rule says, is it the principal point of contact? And to me, it was. Now, Giancarlo is 6'6", right? So if his head's down there, then he's obviously looking down, looking for the puck. So he's in a vulnerable position. There's no question. But Tom Wilson knew what he was doing. He was obviously agitated from the Trent Frederick stuff earlier in the game. If you're Tom Wilson, you can't do that stuff. You obviously have a target on your back with the league and the Department of Player Safety. So I was a little surprised how long the suspension was based on the fact that it's a shorter season. I don't know if they took that into account, 56 games instead of 82. But at the same time, and I think if it had been somebody other than Tom Wilson, I'm not sure it would have been as long or anything. But you know, he's a gritty player. You talk to Barry Trotz, he loves the guy. He says he's greatest guy ever. But when you're doing that sort of stuff, I don't know. I mean, to me, it did look predatory. He knew what he was doing. He's good enough. He's got enough skill. He's a good enough skater that he should be in control in that situation. What'd you think of it?
I mean, you know, I make a lot of cracks on Twitter about it. I just find there's a couple things, and this is probably the reason I wanted to bring it up. He is a beloved team. Like, you know, I've had, whether it's with Barry Trotz, Josh Hosang trains with him in the summer and says he's one of his all-time favorite people. His teammates clearly love him. Even as a media member, I've gone in to talk to him a couple of times. Great. Great talker. He's a thoughtful guy. And I'm sure that that plays a role. But to me, he is what he is. And I think that hit, you couple it with the hit on Mark Jankowski, who's still out of the lineup for the Penguins, which was about a second and a half late when Washington played Pittsburgh a couple weeks ago. You're right. He knows what he's doing. That's the part that is, I think, the most upsetting, is that we're in an era now in the NHL where guys like that, you think back to Matt Cook or Rafi Torres, guys who were out to hurt people with their hits, whether they were completely against the rules or not, that's the intention. And this is, Tom Wilson is trying to hurt somebody. You know you're against the wall there. You know that you're pushing up with your body. You know how big and fast you are. Like, he's trying to hurt Brandon Carlo there. And I think given his history, he shouldn't be doing that. And also, what's frustrating to me is to hear Peter Laviolette, a coach who I have a ton of respect for, Alex Ovechkin, a player who hits a lot and I also have a ton of respect for, immediately jump to this guy's defense. And that to me is like, well, I don't know if this is ever going to change, if there's going to be another guy like Tom Wilson who comes along, if his teammates and his coach instantly defend him for no matter what he does, instead of saying, this guy's got to cool it or we're going to have a real problem here. That to me is just, it's a lack of respect for the rest of the guys in the league. And when we talk about players trying to keep each other from getting their brains knocked out, like, you'd probably not want to do that. So I sort of feel, I get a lot of feelings about that stuff. And my general takeaway is, if the players on his team are okay with him concussing somebody, then maybe I shouldn't care about it as much as I do.
Well, and I think that there's also a way that Lavi and Ovechkin could have gone about that, in my opinion, because I agree with you. It's clearly he's a big locker room guy, and I mentioned what Trotz says about him, right? He's maybe a different player off the ice than what we see on the ice. And a lot of people are. A lot of guys are. And he's got that grit and that sandpaper. And under Trotz, he moved from that just sort of physical fourth-line player to really skilled first-line player that still has that grit and that physical play. But I think for Lavi and Ovechkin to come out and say, you know what, it was a dangerous hit, but it wasn't intentional. That would be different. Whether it was or wasn't, they could have said, you know, we are sorry to see this. It did look like he clipped him in the head, but it wasn't intentional, you know, and at least admit that it was a bad hit, because right. It was, right? And, you know, you could talk. I saw one still shot on Twitter that somebody took, and it's like, oh, it looks like it's shoulder to chest. I'm like, not if you watch that roll, even, and you watch it in slow motion. And I know the refs on the ice don't have the video in the slow motion, but the, you know, War Room does, and I'm sure they looked at every possible angle. And if the head is the principal point of contact, then, and again, they didn't rule head contact, because I think that would have come with a bigger sort of weight of the suspension. They went with boarding, which also makes sense in a lot of ways, although boarding typically, I think, is more of like a from behind is how we've seen it.
Right.
And he was coming up and looking at it. But I think by saying boarding, they could do a 7-game suspension as opposed to far more if it's head contact.
Yeah, well, Islander fans dating back to Wilson on Lubo Vishnovsky in the 2015 playoffs have never really had much affinity for Tom Wilson. So I think he's going to miss at least a couple of the games that they're playing against him at least one next week. So we'll see where it goes. But I imagine that seeing these same teams as many times as they do breeds a little bit more adrenaline and enthusiasm for that side of things than it might otherwise. So, well, a little bit off topic, but I think Islander fans always love to talk some Tom Wilson, especially when he's been suspended. Thank you, AJ. This has been great, as always.
As always, fun to join you. Looking forward to a fun game tonight.
That's right. Islanders-Bruins tonight, and then a bunch with the Devils, and we'll be back next week with some trade deadline talk. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And if you want to subscribe to The Athletic for $3.99 a month, you can go to theathletic.com/nosleeptillbelmont. See you again next week. Thanks.